I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that might.
In the Garden is brought to you by the Flower Farm, featuring season-end opportunities on all our outdoor plants, lots of perennials, trees, and shrubs. Plant this fall for a gorgeous summer next year. Open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. And have we got you there on the line, Ed?
I'm here.
All right. Welcome to the show. Hope you're having a nice day up there. It just got sunny and beautiful down here.
Really? Maybe it's coming this way. I know it's, no, here it's just, here it's low clouds and fine mist. So you are enjoying it, and I'm hoping maybe it's coming this way, although they are forecasting a beautiful Saturday in Juneau. I'm not sure if that's what you're going to get to.
I'm so hoping so.
We've got various festivities going on here. But in the meantime, I'm beginning playing in the mud and planting.
Yeah. You know, and this last weekend here was just legendarily beautiful. And we had our garden tour, which I know you went on in years past. And boy, oh boy, we enjoyed it.
Yeah, last year, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we enjoyed that, and maybe we'll get another nice weekend too. Good news for all the gardeners out there.
It is, yeah. It's harvesting, it's just going madly. I already picked, we've got a big food festival downtown on Saturday, so I just picked 5 pounds of tomatoes and 10 pounds of cucumbers, and I've got apples and blackberries and other stuff to pick for that Saturday morning, and more. So it's really looking good. Here's a question for you, though. We're seeing lots and lots and lots of woolly bear caterpillars. Are you seeing lots of them also?
Yes. Yeah, they are. They are around. They are devastating, it seems like. That was a topic that came up during the garden tour. Deb and Craig out there at the flower farm battle against
them. Yeah, those. I mean, from here, we've got lots. I mean, I watch them. They're crossing the sidewalks, the streets, certainly in the garden, and I'm seeing lots of them in trees, apple and cherry trees and raspberries and blackberries and other stuff. I don't know from what I've seen, they don't seem to be eating that much. They're nibbling on the leaves, certainly some.
Well, now are those big brown moths? Are those what those are going to become, those giant brown moths? Do you know about that?
Yes, they will be. They will. And they will overwinter first. And they are, I suppose they're starting, the big ones at least, they're saying to look for places to hide out. So they'll be out of the rain, and then they spin their cocoons to overwinter. And again, since it was such a mild winter last year, lots more probably survive than would normally. So I don't know what, you know, I'm not going to predict this coming winter, certainly. Mm-hmm. No better than that. But, you know, we'll see what we get and whether it's more or less. And certainly, you know, we talked last time, too, about the slugs and just tremendous slug populations out there. So we got to get after them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We have a caller, a gardener locally, who is just concerned about the European black slug, and she's been trying to find out about it. She heard about it in Tenneke Springs, the black slug.
Fewer them, salt them, spray them with ammonia water, and do whatever else you do for slugs, and just keep after them.
Yeah.
So they're here. I don't know that you're going to eradicate. I doubt you would eradicate them, but, they're here. But in the meantime, we are, one of the things I'm doing this weekend too, I'm doing a workshop at this food festival on seed collection and storage.
Oh, yeah.
Whether that, and that can apply to wild seeds, wildflower seeds, like columbines and lupins and wild iris and shooting stars, that we can then start ourselves, screw out, you know, make our own basically wildflower patch if you've got the space and some bare grounds, as well as some of the domestic and, you know, ornamental perennials and even vegetables, particularly kale. Kale is really, really easy, and I've got lots and lots of that drying in my garage. I've got three fish boxes full, in fact, of kale seed stems. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably have a quart of those. And so, but other stuff like some of the primroses, there's a bunch of those that are ripening the seeds. So if you want, you or your neighbors want more of them, and again, especially for damp locations, they grow really well. And if you start your own from seed, then it's just a much more inexpensive way of getting a lot more plants. Delphiniums, you know, if you see some of the beautiful delphiniums and watch, got to look for those, they're kind of funny looking pods, seed pods on them. And the challenge is with our rain is timing, you know, collecting them so they are mature, and you may have to just cut stems and bring them inside a garage, you know, put them upright in a bucket or something like that. So they can continue, finish maturing and dry out, so then you can shake out the seeds for storage or to get ready to replant.
Yeah. So for our listeners out there maybe who have never harvested seeds from their own garden before, let's talk about kale just as an example. What would be the sort of step-by-step for somebody who wants to harvest their, let's say, kale seeds this summer?
So you've got to look at... So the seed pods that I harvested were actually plants, well, they were seeds planted a year ago in March. And so then these went to, we ate them from, you know, probably from May on into, well, all winter long. We were harvesting from them, but I left some plants there. I didn't cut them all off. It was a mild winter, so and they were starting to flower in May. So I just left them there, and the bees love them. I mean, they are a really good pollen and nectar source, too, which is a plus. Having more things to attract bumblebees and such to our garden is always worthwhile.
Oh, yeah.
Figured, I knew that I was going to be saving seeds, so I just left them there, and gradually it's a long, slender seed pod, and there's usually, well, dozens of them on each stem. And most, and like one kale plant, may have 10 to 20 flowering stems come up off it. And these things, if they're in good soil, they'll get to be 4 to 5 feet tall with yellow flowers. So we just wait, and you watch for the seed pods. And this applies to most plants, really. Watch for those seed pods to gradually turn yellow and then hopefully brown, if possible. And again, you've got to want to watch them. If you don't want to have kale in that area forever, you want to harvest them before they shed their seeds, before the seed pods open up.
Right.
And again, that's where if we've got, you know, boxes, or in fact, I even used a clean garbage can. And again, I was picking, you know, cutting the stems and putting them upside down into this garbage can so that I've got enough places in my garden already where kale has gone to seed in the past. I really don't need to plant it deliberately. If I turn over the soil, kale will sprout.
Right.
And the seeds survive in the soil for I'm not sure how many years.
Wow.
So much like things like foxgloves do the same thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, collect these seeds while they're yellow, starting to turn brown, but before they've opened up, take them indoors into a dry place, and then I'll go back sometime soon. In fact, I'll probably take some of these seeds to this food festival on Saturday and sell seeds for folks to grow. And this, I've been collecting these I've been growing them since 1992 when I first started in Sitka over at the old, at the Russian Bishop's house as a historical vegetable that the Russians might have grown. So it's a very good variety. Quite tender leaves, overwinters well, and again, easy to save from seed. So it's a great plant, tolerates our cold and our wet and our heat when we get it.
So you do Russian red,
really well.
Kale.
So those seed pods that I mentioned, they're dry. I'll just go out there and pretty much strip them off into one of those fish boxes. And then from there, I'll shake that down and sift out the stems and the old pods. And I've got various different kinds of sizes of strainers that I use for different kinds of seeds. Mm-hmm. Then I can clean the seeds. And again, we want them, we're talking about drying. If you're not planting right away, which you could do, if you want to store them for a while, though, usually in a jar in a refrigerator, then you really do want to make sure they're dry. So my garage is not as dry as I might like it to be. So I'll actually bring a pan or a bowl full of these seeds in the house where it's drier. And again, I'll go have them in the house for maybe a week or two, and stirring these seeds up so that they continue to dry for storage. Because mm-hmm. if the seeds have too much moisture still in them, and you put them in a jar with a lid on it, then they may actually get moldy in the jar, and then, well, ruins the seeds.
Yeah.
So drying the seeds is important, whatever you do. So I mentioned the foxglove. Mm-hmm. That, again, those are kind of like the kale. Normally they take 2 years. You know, 1 year they'll grow small plant, the next year they go to flower, so they're a biennial like kale is. And then after they're done flowering, these tall stems have all these kind of triangular shaped seed pods on them, and each pod may have, oh, I've never counted them, probably at least many hundreds of seeds. So one plant will give you thousands of seeds. So if you've got a patch of foxglove, very soon that the soil underneath that is saturated with seed, and again, you turn over the seed, you turn over the soil, and more foxglove will sprout. But again, if you want to spread some, if you want to plant some somewhere else, you know, now's the time to collect them. And again, you might cut and shake them into a bucket, a clean bucket or something like that, and that works quite well.
And you were talking
look
about
in the garden to see what is going to seed, or in the wild. So, I mean, wild iris, that's a good example of one. It is slow to grow from seed. I mean, the wild iris right now, the pods are big. They're turning from green to yellow and will eventually turn brown, and the tops will open up. But if you collect them before the tops of the seed pods open, again, you can cut the long stem, put them in a bucket to dry out in garage so you can save the seeds more easily, and then you have a little bit more control over what happens to them.
So if folks are out there and they're seeing wildflowers that their favorites, you know, columbine or whatever it happens to be, and they're seeing seed pods on them right now, they could, even if they're not, you know, turning brown, they could cut those stems and finish those seed pods off at home before harvesting.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that works really well. You can do that with stuff like the shooting stars I mentioned. Of course, then you've got to be able to recognize, because shooting stars kind of get hidden. Eventually, the seed pods can get kind of hidden by the grass and other weeds and, well, other wild plants growing on some of the moist meadows. So you've got to kind of either you mark them, you know, if you've been out on a hike or something like that, way back in May when they were blooming, then you think, well, boy, I've got to come back here and then collect some this fall. So you've got to either know what they look like or mark them with maybe a little bit of ribbon or something like that that you can come back to. I suppose if you've got a GPS unit and all that, you can, you know, you can take waypoints on that to mark where they are, where they were mm-hmm. blooming, so you can come back to the same spot.
Yeah, that's... So collecting seeds, whether it's wildflowers in the same season or kale or other things in your garden, is something you want to kind of plan for well in advance. And it kind of...
You do, because, again, where normally in your garden, in the home garden at least, Normally we try to deadhead. If we don't want seeds, we don't want thousands of primroses or foxgloves or something like that. Normally, we, as soon as the flowers are done blooming, we would deadhead. We would cut off those stems and seed pods and get rid of them. It also takes energy to make, to mature seeds on that plant. So that energy might otherwise then go into growing more roots and more potential future flower buds for next year. So there is somewhat of, occasionally somewhat of a trade-off. But again, if they're hardy perennials, that's fine. For some annuals, you know, some of the annuals we can do the same thing with. If you, you know, with nasturtiums, for example, they have great big seeds that, you know, stay on the plant. You can make, you can actually make your own capers. You can actually pickle the green, nasturtium seeds. There's recipes online that you can look up and see. Another good one to collect the seeds from, and they are some of the weirdest seeds ever, are calendulas. Sometimes called pot marigolds. They come in yellows and oranges, singles and doubles. And so those are one that has some of the weirdest, if you actually allow them to stay on the plant to mature and turn brown, and again, you can cut the stems if need be, but they have this curved, tapered seed pod with spines along one, let's see, I'm trying to remember, along the inside of the curve. They're not, they're not harmful or painful spines, but they are just some of the weirdest looking seeds around. So again, there's something that can be, save the stems, let these seed pods or seed heads really let them dry, and then save them for next year to restart in early in the spring, since the annuals have to be started every year.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, it sounds like those.
Then I suppose we might follow that with our weeds, which we want to definitely remove before they go to seed.
Right.
Again, whether that be buttercups or chickweed or some of the other weeds that we may have, so that we don't have, you know, a zillion more seeds building up in the soil that are out there. I mean, same thing with you know, it's a little late for that, but. You know, when the dandelions are blooming, that if you, even if you can't pull up all the dandelion plants, that if you can at least strip off the flowers, again, you're going to try to get rid of some of the future seeds and weeds in your garden. Of course, the problem is if your neighbors didn't, then they'll just blow over into your yard.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, I guess that is the other important part of seed collecting, is seed preventing for those invasives or
right.
weeds.
Right, and again, you know, for some of these too, one of the other things on this particular job I'm working on, the seed, it was actually kind of a wild seed, wild grass mix specified, and one of the items in it was fireweed. Well, fireweed, they usually can't find anybody who is collecting and doing all that seed cleaning like we talked about. And fireweed seed, if you actually, I'm sure you see the fluff.
Yeah.
You know, when it starts blowing off, when it dries, and when it's mature. Well, the seeds are tiny. They're like, they're dust-sized seeds attached to this fluff that floats off on the breeze, smaller than dandelion seeds.
Wow.
And so with this project, since we couldn't buy any for the seed mix, I've actually been going out with my truck and a tarp and cutting off stems, preferably when it's wet, kind of damp, so, and just cutting the seed stems off, and laying, then when I cover them over with the tarp so they don't blow out as I'm driving down the highway, and then laying these on the bare ground that I'm looking at in front of me here, so that they will, the seeds will start to germinate very quickly. So 2 to 3 weeks from now, when I've just planted or just thrown the seed stems out, then there will be this little line of tiny fireweed plants starting to grow where the seeds have come off those stems.
Ah, right. So you can't exactly collect the individual seeds, but you can collect the stems that have gone to seed with stuff that small.
Right, exactly. Or you could, you know, or you could strip the fluff off, which is, I guess, what they actually do in to use for hydro seeding. These banks were around me have been hydro seeded, so they actually mix. You've got a big tank with an agitator. You add water to it, fertilizer, the green stuff, the green fiber material, and some fertilizer, and then you add the seed mix to that. So there's folks, I understand, that they literally using like a shop vac or a you may have seen the leaf blowers. Well, you can blow, or some of them are vacuums also. So the folks who collect this stuff, they'll go along and suck the fluff off the fireweed stems. You find a big patch of it, mm-hmm. and then they take that and it gets tossed into this hydroseeding tank, where it is then mixed up and then mixed with the other assorted seeds, mulch, fertilizer, and all that, and then sprayed out onto the banks or onto bare ground, like along roadsides, where nowadays they're trying DOT, Alaska DOT, and other states too, are trying to use native plant material rather than some of the more invasive and exotic stuff, which is probably one of the ways we got things like some of the daisies, perhaps foxglove, the sweet rocket or Dame's rocket, some of the other non-native, somewhat invasive plants, which look nice but aren't really the best choice along the highway.
So they're using they're spraying fireweed seed along the banks to prevent, like, landslides along roadways on those banks, or?
Yeah, exactly. Some of this stuff in front of me is 45-degree slopes. Mm-hmm. So with the mulch and all the rest of that, then the grasses and the wildflowers and all of that, lupins, columbines are also in this mix. All of those will gradually grow, so you'll get some color as well as bank stabilization.
Nice. Wow. That's cool. Well,
I'm sure there's folks down there that, or somebody, if you've got some construction going on along highways particularly, mm-hmm. You may have seen the hydro seeding where they've got a green dye that's mixed in with the fiber so you can see it when they spray it out. Mm. And so you can see where it's been sprayed and don't have to go back over it.
Huh. Yeah, I'm sure that is happening, but I never need to look for it. But that is cool. And it certainly makes sense that local wildflower plants would be highly preferable to invasives, for sure.
Right. That way, then, again, we've got that more beneficial to your local wildlife, whether it be birds, deer, bears, porcupines, whatever that might be eating this stuff. Although the bears really do, I don't know about in your neighborhood, but out here in our place, the bears just love dandelions in the spring. When the dandelions are blooming, the bears are out there browsing, just grazing on the dandelions along the roadsides.
Wow.
And, of course, that then leads to bear jams, and people stop to take photographs and all of that. So, but it's good to see them eating the dandelions.
Yeah, helping prevent those from going to seed. Doing their
right, we could hope so that they don't. Unlike some of the other berries and stuff that go through the bear, and then the bear leaves them behind to grow, like, which is probably better. You know, the blueberries and the salmon berries and all that sort of thing.
Right,
see little clumps of those blooming where the bears have been.
Yeah, right. Replanting fertilized seeds.
Exactly.
Oh boy, putting the bear in berries.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the birds, too. Of course, the birds are eating the different berries, elderberries and blueberries and salmonberries and all the rest of that. And the birds are definitely spreading them, too. And you can see places where at certain, you know, preferred perching or nesting trees for birds, where you'll have all this little stuff starting to sprout underneath them.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yep. You see that. Well, this has been an enlightening talk about this time of year's seed stuff. Collecting seeds, preventing seeds, seeds in your garden, seeds in the wild, the flowers. And, I want to thank you for your time there, Ed. And I hope
you're welcome, Oren. And we'll see what we can come up for next week.
Yeah, we'll keep it going. Good luck this weekend with that food festival. That's up in Juneau?
Yep. Oh, yeah, it should be a good time. Yeah, there's people be selling fruits and vegetables, jams and jellies. I know it'd be nice. Sometimes they've had folks selling fresh or frozen fish also, you know, so we're getting some, and usually there's somebody with some good bread and other baked goods. So all sorts of good stuff here.
That sounds great. Well, I look forward to hearing all about it next week, Ed, and thank you again, and see you next week.
Okay, will do.
All right.
Bye, Arne.
Bye-bye. So as always, In the Garden is brought to you by, or at least supported in part, by The Flower Farm, featuring season-end opportunities on all our outdoor plants, lots of perennials, trees, and shrubs, so you can plant this fall for a gorgeous summer next year. They're open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing.
I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me up big. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see.